Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. I just want to take a minute and say thank you for listening, for taking your time today or anytime whenever you are listening to this to engage with this content. As so many of you have been so generous to leave comments and rate the podcast, we just want to say thank you for that. And if you would continue, if this podcast has blessed you in any way, would you just rate that? Because that's incredibly helpful for us, or even leave a comment specifically to tell us how this is impacting you. Today on the show, Elizabeth and I have a wonderful new friend on the show named Greta Eskridge, and we are so honored to have you. Greta, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
This is going to be a fun, we've already been having fun conversation before the interview actually started. And we all anticipate this is going to be a fun time. So thank you for spending some time with us today.
Yeah. And Greta, I first came across you in, I was following like the Wild and Free Instagram account, which anybody listening, it's like kind of this really cool homeschool community that has formed, kind of started over social media, I think, if I understand that right. And then conferences, and you're one of the contributors and speakers. And I'm not going to lie, you are my favorite out of anybody I've listened to. And I just feel like listening to you or following you on social media, I just feel like I know you. Like that's can be creepy, but I just feel like I know you and that like I can relate to you. And you talk about things that I can relate with. And so I've followed you forever and then just had the random idea a few weeks back. I was like, I'm just going to email her and see if she would come and talk to us. And you said yes. So here you are. But would you just introduce your family to us and tell us what you do? Because you've written a book, you're writing another one right now, and you just have a lot that you're contributing to the world. So tell us about that.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm married to my husband, Aaron. We've been married almost 23 years. We got married when we were five. No,
just kidding. It's okay. We did too.
I was going to do the math. I was like, but you're only 30. How is that possible?
we did. He was my first boyfriend. We met when I was 17 and we fell in love while we were on a mission trip to India with my dad.
I'm sure that's a fun story.
Elizabeth and I met when we were 17 and I'm not going to steal your thunder, but there was a lot of connection with that. The only difference is she broke up with me for like 2.5 years because I was not like marriage material. Anyway, another story, another time. Keep going with yours.
Oh man, see how quickly we can just go off the rails.
I know.
Have so much to share. So anyways, Aaron and I have been together for more than half my life and he's an artist. And so we're a really creative family. I write and he paints and draws and we have four kids. They're three boys and one girl. So they range in age from 17 to 10. And they're all super creative, spend a ton of time every day drawing and making things. And we homeschool. I've homeschooled them from the very start. They've never been in traditional school. I was homeschooled myself and I loved it. So I had a stint being a public high school teacher for 5 years before we had kids. And I loved that too. Mm-hmm. But when we had kids, I wanted to just be able to be home with them full time. And so, I've been homeschooling for a long time now.
Yeah.
And in the last few years, I've started writing and speaking more. My first book came out last summer. It's a blur. I can't even remember.
Yeah.
And I wrote a book called Adventuring Together about connecting with your kids through adventure. And I'm passionate about helping parents connect with their kids and create lasting relationships, because we live in a world where relationships are often fractured, or there are false relationships offered, meaning like a false idea of connection and intimacy. And that's kind of the other thing I'm passionate about, which is helping parents protect their kids from porn, which is, I think, one of the greatest examples. Great not meaning good, but the biggest example of, in our current time, of this false intimacy being offered.
Yeah.
And so I want to help parents create real life connection so that their kids can be protected from that false offer of relationship and intimacy that pornography is so tempting our kids with these days. So there you go. That's the whole,
you know? You did, you've done this before. I love how succinct that was. I would just say, if anybody's listening, Adventuring Together, get the book and learn, because I know even for us as parents, we're always trying to find unique ways to engage with our kids that isn't around screens, right? And in a culture that just so many screens are involved all the time, you have to be so thoughtful. I mean, radical, really, to actually not have your family be centered around screens.
Yeah.
It takes so much, I mean, so much work, and we're still learning how to actually do that in an effective way. Because like, even in this season, I'm kind of laughing because everyone's like, hey, let's all lessen our screen time, except for your Zoom meetings, your school meetings, your interviews, your job, your entertainment, but just like, no more screen time. You're like, but everything has to be on a screen right now. So there's that weird like tension that we're, I'm sure, all holding. But what a beautiful passion that Jesus has given you, and what a beautiful help. I would just be curious. I know, Elizabeth, you have a couple questions as well, but where did that start for you? You were talking about specifically the intimacy piece, like the false intimacy. Where does some of that like start in you? Where did you start realizing that, man, pornography is this cheap trade for something else? People are trying to find connection in the wrong places. Where did that kind of emerge for you?
Gosh, it's been sort of it's definitely been an unexpected process. But I'm a very relational person. I love connecting with people. I love, I value relationships. And so I knew that I wanted to have really close connected relationships with my kids that would span the test of time. My hope was that, at first when they were all little and people would say, oh, just wait till they're teenagers and they won't want to be with you anymore and you won't want to be with them. And I'm a little bit rebellious. So I was like, that's not going to be my story. And then I had to figure out how to make it not be my story. And one of the things that I started to see and to realize was that the pull towards technology and then the pull towards pornography was really growing with, especially with teens and young adults. So I thought, okay, well, how can I prevent that in my kids? How can I help them avoid that? And so I just started learning and researching. And of course, the more I learned, the more I realized that the problem was so much bigger than I thought. And the consequences were so much more grave than I realized. And I also realized that not a lot of people were talking about it.
Yeah.
And especially young moms or moms of young kids, especially if we've we're ones who've grown up in, you know, a Christian culture where you just don't talk about sex stuff, good mm-hmm. and especially not bad.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I guess I have got to talk about this because nobody else is. And when I did, like the first, I had a podcast at the time and I did a podcast episode and I talked about protecting kids from pornography. And I was so nervous and I felt so uncomfortable and I felt so unqualified, but I did it anyways. And the response was overwhelming because moms were saying, I'm so glad you're talking about this because I've been afraid. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. I don't even know what to research. How do I do it? And so it's just been this process, like I said, unexpected. And not necessarily what I wanted. I didn't want to be like the porn lady, which is what some of my friends call me now.
I was going to say like how many, I know. I mean, like I so share that with you, like even with the, you know, we help parents and I'm like, oh, but I don't want to be like the guy that's like the parent guy. Like, you know, you have all these identities over yourself and you're like, I don't want to be whatever the thing is that you're called to be sometimes. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say is that, but as this has progressed, what I've realized that is that I do, I care so much. I care for my kids. I say that I have four reasons that I talk to parents about pornography and they are James, William, Lily, and Davey, my four kids. Like they're the reason. But then also the more I talk to other parents, I realize I'm doing it for their kids too. And, it's so far reaching. If we can help our kids right now, the age as whether they're 7 or 17 or 27, like it has the potential to cause a ripple effect for good for their whole life. That's tremendous. Whereas if we just say, oh, I can't say anything because I'm too uncomfortable, it's too awkward, I'm scared, then that ripple effect could be stopped. And instead of good happening, there could be so many things that will be problems for them for their whole life. And I would love to be a person who helps to be a ripple effect for good.
Wow. One of the things you said that just is in my mind, I can't get it out, is you started recognizing the consequence. Can you maybe kind of unpack that a little bit? As you started kind of understanding more, as you said, the problem was much more vast than you realized, but you also started realizing the consequences were more intense than maybe you realized. What are some of the consequences that, you know, parents might need to be aware of? And the reason I ask is because I think there's a lot of parents, good natured, godly, great people that go, oh, it's not like, I don't want my kids to like see porn or anything, but I mean, everyone, like I've heard this before, well, everyone's going to see it. How do you hide it? You know, you've heard it all too. So yeah, give me some of the details around that. What are some of the consequences that you've seen?
Well, I think it's really important to know that pornography has an impact on the whole body, the whole self. So it has a physical impact. It has an emotional, a spiritual, and a mental impact. So every part of a human body that is engaging with porn is going to be impacted. So physically, some of the things that happen are pornography is extremely addictive because it's combining a feel-good chemical that's released while you're engaging with pornography, dopamine, which is, I feel good, this is good, let's do it again. You're combining that with typically almost always masturbation. So you're combining a sexual act with the feel-good chemical, and that makes an incredibly powerful effect. And it's very hard, especially for a developing adolescent brain, to stop and to step away from that. It's not just like, oh, it's no big deal, I can just do it and walk away. Once you become, once you begin to engage in that way, the desire and the addictive qualities are very powerful. So there's a physical impact. And then there's other physical impacts that are happening too, besides the way it impacts the brain. For example, one that I share often that surprised me was that for the first time in history, we're having an actual epidemic of young men. We're talking like guys in their early 20s or late teens who are struggling with erectile dysfunction because they can't be aroused unless they're engaging with pornography. Because what's happened is their body has and their brain have become deadened to real life connection, the real intimacy that sex is supposed to offer. And instead they're going for this false intimacy, this false connection. And it literally has a physical impact on their body. Wow. And that's unheard of. Like that's not something that a young man at the height of his sexual energy should be dealing with, but that's what's happening because of pornography. So that's the physical, those are two examples of physical impact of pornography.
Yeah.
Emotionally and spiritually and mentally, pornography causes things like depression, self-hatred, immense amounts of shame, withdrawal, because it's such an isolating thing. It's something that we know isn't good for us, but that addictive quality is so powerful. We're drawn to it, but then we want to turn away and people don't know what to do. Nobody wants to talk about it. So it creates just this wall of isolation, but it's hard to step out of it. And so it creates so many problems in connecting with real life people and real life connection. And in fact, if you were to go further down the line and talk about people who are engaging with pornography once they're married, your chances of engaging in an extramarital affair are increased by like 200% if you're also engaging with pornography. Wow. Because it is a cumulative thing that it builds. You don't start off with, you know, hardcore porn. You start off with something, a softer, that's a weird word, but that's what they call it, soft porn. Yeah. But then that starts to become less exciting, less gratifying. And so people seek out more and more. And so that's why I said it's a far-reaching thing. Like this is a lifelong effect. You might not think that your 15-year-old engaging with porn, that could be affecting him or her in their marriage in their 30s, but it very much can. And so that's why we want to help families with kids that are little, because we want to send them into marriage prepared to have a healthy, happy, successful marriage, not one that's dragging along baggage of porn addiction. So those are some of the examples of the grave impacts of pornography.
Man,
thank you so much for sharing that, because I think, you know, there's so many parents who maybe know, like in a far off sense, I know that's not good. I don't want anybody in my home engaging in that, but maybe don't know the full extent of how damaging it is lifelong. And I think so many parents are coming from, well, their parents never even talked to them about sex.
Right.
So not only do they not know how to talk about sex, but then how to talk about porn, like what, you know, and maybe they have a 15-year-old who they've never talked to. They've never had the sex talk with. So how are they going to engage in this conversation? But you talk a lot. I've read some of your articles online and we'll link all of them in our show notes. But you talk about starting really young, talking to our kids and how, you know, obviously there's some parents might push back to that and say, well, I don't want to put ideas in their mind. But I loved everything I've ever read that you've written about that, because I think it just opens up a new way to talk about it, to start an honest conversation from a very young age, so that by the time you have a 15-year-old who maybe is struggling, you've already opened the door of conversation, and it's a normal household topic that you're talking about. So can you tell us, like, if you were to walk through how to talk to your kids about this, like starting fresh, when would you start and what would that conversation look like and how would that progress? I'm just thinking of all the parents listening who are like, great, but how do I do
this?
That's
a great question. Right. That's a great question.
Yes. Maybe myself included.
we always need practical tips, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Especially when it comes to this topic. So I think that ideally you would start talking to your kids about pornography by the time they're about 6 or 7. And at that age, of course, it's going to be very minimal and it's going to be age appropriate. And then the conversation will grow as they get older based on what they're coming in contact with, they're being exposed to, and what they can handle developmentally. Mm-hmm. When they're that age, they're little, 6 or 7, you need to remember, first of all, that they don't have the weight and the baggage that you might have when it comes to the word pornography. To them, yeah. pornography is just another word. It's something that doesn't have like just the intensity that it has for us as parents, as adults, mm-hmm. right? So that should give you a little bit of relief. Like,
yeah.
okay, they don't know all the yeah. stuff that I know, and I'm here to help them not have to know all that stuff yet.
Yeah.
And so I'm actually helping them.
Yeah.
And so you can say something as simple as, I need to tell you about something that will help keep you safe when you are looking at screens, because that's most of the time where they're going to come in contact with pornography. Mm-hmm. And you can say, there's this thing, it's called pornography, and it's really bad for your brain and it's bad for your heart. And it's my job to help keep you safe from it. And then you need to give them a definition of what pornography is, because you can't just say there's this thing called pornography. You need to tell yep. them what it yep. is, right? Yep. And developmentally, it can be as simple as, pornography is pictures or movies of people who aren't wearing any clothes or are showing their privates. And we don't show our privates to everybody. And so we don't want to look at everybody's privates. And mm-hmm. so if you see pornography come up on a screen when you're playing on a tablet, or if someone shows it to you on the bus or at the baseball game, or somebody's older brother or sister, or if you see it when you're looking at mom's phone, we're at Costco together and I'm letting you look on my phone because you're bored with shopping.
Yeah.
What I want you to do is, I want you to just turn that phone over or close the laptop. Walk away. If somebody shows you, say, I don't want to look at that, and turn your head and walk away from them. Give them practical ways to stop engaging with the pornography, because they need to know what to do, because it might be so shocking that mm-hmm. they feel paralyzed. And instead, absolutely. If you say, here's what it is. So you define it. Here's where you might see it, so that they're not surprised when it happens. And mm-hmm. then here's what you do when you see it. You give them those three things, and you have prepared them with something that's really practical and doable and not scary for how to handle. And then the last thing that's super important is, you say, and if that happens, you need to come talk to me or dad or yes. some other grown-up that we trust. Name a yes. few grown-ups that they could talk to, because they, what if you're not around or mm-hmm. they don't feel comfortable coming to you for some reason?
Yeah.
Let them know, brainstorm a few people on your list. You get to talk to a grown-up, you won't be in trouble. And mm-hmm. we just want to help keep you safe. So those are the four things you need to do.
And that's wow.
how you start with your little ones.
I think that's so good, because you're talking to them, like you said, it's just another word. They feel no shame or awkwardness mm-hmm. Around that word. You might, as the parent, as you're trying right. to talk to them, but they don't. Mm-hmm. And to me, that sounds like even just cutting it off at the pass before there's any shame associated with it, mm-hmm. before they're sexualized, before they've gone through puberty, like to just say, hey, this is what it is and this is what you do, and you're not in trouble. Before, right. you know, to me, that just sounds like so much wisdom to have that conversation, because like I mentioned, then as the conversation evolves, you're going to have already laid a foundation, which I just think is so smart and so good.
Yes.
So tell us now, how does that conversation evolve?
Well, I think I just want to add one other thing for the conversation with the little ones, is that I know a lot of parents, I still get pushback for talking to your kids when they're that young,
yeah.
but we hopefully have all talked to our kids when they're that young about keeping their body safe from
yeah.
like a sexual predator, whether it's a person they know, which is most often the case, or not. Like, we all know we have to have that conversation with our kids, mm-hmm. as much as we don't want to. We tell them, your body is private. It's worthy of being cherished and kept safe. Well, mm-hmm. if you think of the pornography talk as an extension of that talk, because a child being exposed to pornography at a young age is a form of sexual molestation. They're not ready for it. It has a negative impact on them, mm-hmm. on their brain and their hearts. And so it's really just this conversation, as much as we don't want to face it,
yeah.
it's for their safety and it's yes. for their lifelong
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
So And the reason it's so good to have it when they're young is so that when they get older, like you mentioned, the when they hit puberty and these conversations about sexual topics become more uncomfortable and awkward because they are suddenly feeling things.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've laid the stage to make it slightly less awkward.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
they become well, a teenager.
I love what you're saying. And I personally love it so much because I think that old adage, I know that my parents' generation and the many generations before has been basically like, they'll figure it out. Mm. They're going to figure out this thing and we're not really going to talk about it. We're not even really going to help them. There's like, their friends will tell them they'll figure it out. And we haven't seen that go so well over the years. And I mean, even my parents love Jesus. They're incredible people, but they never talked with me about sex. They were just like, the similar idea, like they'll figure it out. And I remember I was one of those kids who was 10 years old and I was at my friend's house and my parents were away and they're like, hey, look at this. And I look, it was pornography, but I didn't even know what I was looking at. Like I was,
yeah.
I remember thinking that's weird. I don't get it. I don't understand what right. that is, but I knew it was weird, but I knew it wasn't like good for me. I already knew that. And I just think about so many, that happens so often to so many kids, so many young people. And man, if my kids, or if I even at that stage had tools and my parents were talking to me at 6 or 7, I would have known exactly what to do. Right. And I think there's a beautiful, there's just something beautiful about what you're talking about and helpful. And if you love your kids, I think what I'm hearing you say, and what I know that we believe with our whole heart, if you love them, you're going to have the hard conversations. If you love them, you're going to say the things that maybe are not comfortable, but are so necessary. And I cannot imagine anybody signing up and being like, I want to have this talk with my kids. This sounds really enjoyable and not awkward and very pleasant. Like, no, none of those feelings are going to be a part of it, but so necessary. And I'm just so thankful that you're encouraging us in that. So I know, Elizabeth, you did ask a great question about I was the one that derailed, not you. You know, just about, what does that look like as they get older? So that's like 6 or 7, but how has that evolved in your situation? How have you evolved that with as your kids get older?
So in our family, we might not be the norm. for example, not too long ago, one of my older sons said, he's like, I can't even come into the house and be in the house for 5 minutes without hearing about sex or pornography. And I was like, you're exaggerating. That's not true. And the very next day he walks into the kitchen where I'm doing dishes, listening to a podcast about pornography. And he's like, he just throws his hand in the air. He's like, see, I told you. So it's definitely not something I hide. I have a large resource library of books that I'm reading on these topics, and those books aren't hidden away. They're on the shelf with every, you know, all of our other books. My kids call it the porn section, and they're like, you know, our friends come over, I wonder if they think it's weird we have a porn section in our library. And I was like, well, I hope that it makes them know that they can ask questions.
That's great.
Because ultimately that's what I have tried so hard to create, is an openness. Yeah. And what I do is I try to capitalize on opportunities. So for example, not too long ago, last week, my two older boys and I were driving and a car pulled up next to us that was covered in drawings, anime style drawings, which is a kind of a Japanese style cartooning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And very, very sexualized drawings, many inappropriate, of girls all over this guy's car. Mm. And we all were like taken aback. But then instead of saying to them, like, shield your eyes, boys, you know, don't look at the sun, you'll be blinded. But instead I was like, wow, what is that guy thinking? Why do you think he put that all over his car? And so we started to have a conversation about why and how it made us feel, what we thought might be his motivations, and whether it was wrong or right, and how it impacted other people, and how should they respond? Would looking at that cause them temptation or be a struggle for them? How should they respond? So I just capitalized on it. And And they said, they're like, only when we're driving with mom would have to pull up next to a car that has pornography on it. Why does it always happen?
And mom's going to talk about it.
Yeah, I feel like, Greta, I feel like you and I, as far as the, you know, the, I already have the reputation in our family, like, oh, dad's going to talk about the awkward stuff. Like, no matter what, I'll be the one that brings up the thing or pokes the bear in the room. Like, if there's some weird bear to be poked, I'm the one, that's my responsibility. And I feel like, they know already, like, oh gosh, dad, they just roll their eyes like, oh, I know he's going to say something like, yes, kids. And it's right. You know, I have all that.
But I love that you started with a question, not, hey kids, that's bad. Never put that on your car, you know, which I think is like what
obviously, don't put it on your car.
Yeah, don't put it on your car.
Please don't put it on your car.
But like by asking them questions, why do you think he felt the need to put that on his cart? Like you are opening up a dialogue with your kids rather than just shoving it down their throat of that's bad, stay away from it, which I think is often, you know, the message in the church is sex outside of marriage is bad, 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 bad. And then people get married and we just don't talk about it. You know, and I think what you're saying is we're opening up an open dialogue about it because you want them to have sex be what God created it to be.
Right.
And you're showing them the difference. And I think that's so powerful. It's so, so powerful. And a gift that you're giving your kids.
Yeah. Well, and I don't want to cut you off, but you know, I'm thinking about our own life and our own story. Like, so my parents didn't have an interactive dialogue or even a language around sexual, you know, activity inside, outside of marriage at all, really. Mm-hmm. And, but then I meet this girl and her family, had a way more healthy culture around that, talked about stuff. And when her older brother had gotten married, he had said, and he knew we were engaged and about to get married. He said, now listen, like the night before your wedding, mom and dad are going to sit you down and they're going to talk to you about all the details of the wedding night to help you because they really do want the best for you. But just listen, it might be helpful, but we know what it will be. And that's going to be mostly awkward for you and really uncomfortable, but just be warned this is coming. And like clockwork, like a couple nights before we get married, Phil and Diane, who are on this podcast with us most of the time, they literally say, they sit us down and like clockwork, just go through just, you know, any question we might possibly have, all the details. And then you start realizing like, oh, the details that they're sharing with us are probably taken from their own personal experience, which then made it even worse.
Yes.
Real awkward for me.
And then like you're sitting there and like, even thinking back, there's like the cringe feeling, you know, the kids like, you know, and I'm sure like even your boys are in that moment, like, gosh, mom. And then all at the same time, I know for a fact, because I know I am so thankful for that. Grateful. And even though there's some moments of awkwardness, the blessing of having people speak into your life or help you in a way which is, it's so private, it's intimate for sure. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a conversation that you should have with anybody or everybody all the time, but with the right people that care enough to have the conversation. I think that's one of the most beautiful gifts that you can give your kids. And I know in our situation, although it was especially more awkward for her than it was for me because it was her parents, it was also like it set so many things. It took so many worries away. It set so many clear expectations. They gave us a great example or an idea of like, here's things that you need to be thinking about and don't be worried about this and think about that. You know, just all the good things that come from it. So that's I just want to applaud you and say like, although they're cringing, they're going to be so thankful. Like when they have a problem, when they get married, they're gonna be like, you know what, mom's gonna talk to us about this. like your wedding night, gosh, she's gonna come over to the house and she's gonna share all these things.
I do have to say, just to sort of to be really honest, in that moment when the car pulled up, like my initial response was like, what a jerk. Like I was irritated at that guy and I had to stop myself and I had to remember what I tell parents when I speak about protecting kids from pornography is one of the things that I tell them to do. I give them five things that they need to do. And one of them is to be compassionate. And the reason I say that is because first of all, we need to be compassionate so that our kids will come to us and not be like, oh, mom and dad are going to, you know, they're going to hate me or they're going to be so mad at me. But we also need to be compassionate in how we talk about people who are engaging with pornography because if we're like, what a jerk, what a pervert, what a, you know, I don't respect him or whatever you say, if that comes across, your kids are going to internalize that. And then
yeah,
if they're dealing with it themselves and they haven't experienced your compassion for other people, they're not going to expect it, that you'll have it for them. And so I had to remind myself, why would this guy want to have these pictures on his car? Maybe no one has ever taught him to not objectify women. Maybe yeah. he's never been shown that women's bodies are worthy of celebration and respect and honor. And maybe that's why he's putting these pictures on his car. We don't know, but I can speak about him with compassion. I can still say yeah. what he's doing is not appropriate. And I can still say that's not something that we admire or appreciate, yeah. but I can also speak about him with compassion in my heart because I want something better for him.
Yes.
And I think if we can communicate that with our kids as well, as part of the conversation as they grow up, not just that there's openness, but there's compassion and care, and that we're saying, we want something so much better for you. Like,
yes.
like your parents did on the wedding night, like, or yeah. the pre-wedding night. They weren't with you on the wedding night.
Oh. No, they were not.
I was
they
like,
weren't
listen.
That involved.
Yeah. No, praise the Lord.
I was like,
Lord.
Listen, there's some lines here. We can, no.
But they were showing you that they cared and they wanted yes. to say, this is something wonderful. And,
yes.
and that's what I always try to balance the pornography talk with is, yes, pornography is wrong. Pornography is bad. Pornography is a distortion of the beautiful thing that yes. God created, yes. which is sex. And,
yes.
and so we want our kids to understand not just pornography is wrong, flee from it, but the reason we flee from it is because we want something that's so much better,
better.
God's design.
Yeah. Yes.
And yeah. so those are the conversations I try to have over and over with the kids. And because of the world we live in, those opportunities are happening all the time,
all
whether
the time.
It's yeah. a billboard when you're driving down the freeway
yep,
or
yep.
a Triscuit commercial that comes on the Triscuit crackers had a commercial that was wildly inappropriate and sexualizing crackers. And my kids picked up
oh,
on
gosh.
It because we have these conversations. So there's plenty of opportunity and it's just a matter of saying like, oh, hey, did you notice that? Like, what do you think about it? Let's talk.
Yeah. Well, yeah. you know, you said there's five things that you tell, was it parents, right? It's mm-hmm. five things.
Yeah.
You got my ears perked up. So I heard one, I need the other four. And whoever's listening, and you don't have to go into all of them, but like, give us the five things that you tell parents. We know one's compassion, right? So what are the other four?
Okay. So the first one is to be informed. And that okay. means to be informed about what your kids are, who are the voices speaking into your kids' life in terms of sexuality?
Oh, that's great.
So what apps are they using? What shows are they watching? What books
yes.
are they reading? What video games are they playing? What is the sexual message that's being poured into them in mm-hmm. those places? So be informed. You have to do research on your kids.
Yeah.
yeah.
The second one would be prepared. And that's where you have that porn plan. That's what I call it, which mm-hmm. is a weird name. People hate it, but they don't forget it. so
Good
you
got to
be prepared, have that porn plan. And that's where you talk, you do those steps that I spoke about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one is to be compassionate. So your conversations towards your kids, if they come to you, you're compassionate. Or when you're speaking about people who are struggling with porn, you're compassionate. The fourth thing is to be different. And you mentioned that earlier, I think before we even started recording, to be counterculture
yeah.
and to say, hey, you know what, 12-year-old, you don't need constant access to Safari yeah. and Google search engines. I'm not letting you have that on your device. Or actually maybe 12-year-old, you don't need your own device.
Yeah.
yeah.
Maybe you're being different by saying your kids under 18 don't need their own social media account.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, mm-hmm. you can and should be different than what the culture is saying, because that increases your chance of giving your kids a different view, a healthier view of sexuality, and not having to deal with so many of the toxic messages that are being given to them.
That is so helpful.
A lot of stuff.
That's so good.
And it's, and I know it's hard. Yeah. I have three teens. I know it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for them. It's hard for us. But the things that are hardest to do are usually the things that are most worthwhile.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid to be different. Be counterculture and make it cool. Make it cool to be different. Yes. And then the last thing is to be involved. Because I think, like I said earlier, one of the worst things about pornography is it offers this false sense of intimacy, this false connection. And that's what a lot of people are searching for. And oftentimes people go in search of pornography because they are lonely and they are discouraged or depressed. And all it does is perpetuate it.
Yeah.
They're longing for real connection. So if we are involved in our kids' life in a really intentional way, and we go out of our way to spend time with them, not just when we drive them to soccer practice, but like other ways that we regularly, intentionally spend time with them, connect with them, that will show them what real connection is, what real intimacy is, so that they could identify the lie that pornography is offering them. So those are the five things.
Oh, man. Can we just spend all day talking about those five things? Those are all
those would be really
so good. I have so many like follow-up questions I want to ask, but let me work backwards of what you were just saying about connection, showing them what real connection is apart from a screen, apart from pornography, apart from Netflix, like showing them like real connection, which I think so beautifully, you know, it might seem on the outside that the things that you do, the adventuring together, the book you wrote and your work with protecting our kids from pornography, they might seem separate, but they're so beautifully interwoven.
Together, yeah.
And so I think that's where the work that you've done of that connection piece and helping families connect. Like, can you just give us like, I mean, I'm sure you could talk about it all day, but what are some ways parents could start doing that right now? Right now when their kids are on way more screens than they might ever be comfortable with, just due to all the Zoom school and all of that.
I was going to say COVID. I mean, we've always had a very strict digital rule of life. We're still in it, but I'm just like, let's just be real. COVID has punched us in the face when it came to a lot of a lot of the, some of those rules. And not because we were like, well, we want to bend them, but we're like, wow, we are inside and we live in a seasonal place. So there's these long seasons. We're going outside for any length of time.
It's real cold.
It's really cold. So, you know, like just trying to get creative. So we kind of did an abridged one for COVID, right?
Yeah.
But man, coming back from that or even trying to come back from that has just been very challenging. So I just want to, if anyone out there is listening right now, I think COVID has been especially challenging for us to find that. So sorry to cut you off.
No, it's so true.
I think even just that a lot of our kids have to be on screens for school. And we know that there's been a massive surge of predators who've done Zoom bombing or Google Classroom bombing or whatever to get on classrooms with kids, elementary school kids or junior high or high school, and showing pornographic images or saying things that are vile and filthy. And so you're like, my kid has to be in class, and yet this is something I have to worry about. So now more than ever, despite how much we want them to be not on screens, they are, because they have to be, but then it's like, well, how do I navigate it? And so I would say one of the best ways that you can connect with your kids away from screens and in a way that you could do, whether they're 2 or they're 22, is to go hiking. And I know that sounds like so simplistic, and you're like, also, I hate hiking. Or my kid would hate hiking. But here's why I love it. Multiple reasons. it's cheap. Sometimes even free. It's super accessible because you don't have to like go to climb Mount Everest to do a hike. Your hike could be in a nature center or a park near your home. So it's totally accessible. You could make it as long or as short as need be for you and your child's ability. Mm-hmm. You can often when you're hiking, like technology isn't something you can engage in either because you have no service or because it's really hard to walk over rocks and sticks and things and look at your phone.
And scroll so Instagram.
Yeah. You just put it away. But my favorite thing is that I think walking side by side provides a really wonderful opportunity for conversation because it reduces the awkwardness that sometimes comes when you're like face to face. Like if you tell your kid, hey, let's go out for donuts and we're going to talk. And especially if they're older, they might, and you haven't really done this. Mm-hmm. You're sitting across the table from them with your chocolate milk or your coffee and your maple bar. And nobody knows what to say.
Yes.
But if you're just walking next to each other side by side, your conversation might just be about the nature you're seeing around you. You're creating a safe space for conversation so that time or the next time they know, oh, I can talk to mom or dad about this question I have or this thing that's on my heart. And I don't even have to look at them because I feel awkward, and it's safe because nobody's really around. It's such a perfect place to have good conversations. And so if you make a regular thing of it once a month, we go every week. It just creates a wonderful place to have good conversations. Not every time, but sometimes.
But sometimes. And we talk about it a lot of like that shoulder to shoulder.
Yes.
Time. And especially with boys, because I think sometimes they feel assaulted by the mom who wants to connect and look them in the eyes and talk about feelings or, you know, depending on your kid. Yeah. But so often that shoulder to shoulder, and even, I mean, Brooke and I have found even for our marriage, like it's that type of shoulder to shoulder friendship that is so important. And I think when you're out there adventuring together and hiking, you get that automatically. Yeah. And I've read something of yours or maybe heard you say something, I think maybe one of the talks you did where you were saying that when your kids were little, maybe you do it now too, you never had a hike that you didn't bring M&Ms to get you to the top
of
the hill.
I still bring candy.
And I just laughed a little, I think out loud, because that's like so against my nature. I'd be like, no, let's bring all like the granola bars and the fruit. But really what would get my kids up to the top of that hike without complaining would be M&Ms. So you gave me the freedom to get M&Ms the next time we go on a hike.
But I promise you, Greta, that probably won't happen.
He'll buy them and say, Greta said to do it.
What happens is she'll go to Trader Joe's and get the off-brand ones, and they know the difference. And they'll be like, listen.
The dye-free one.
These are not M&Ms. These are imposters.
Where is the red dye number 5, mom?
It's true. I need it.
She's a great mom just wanting to help our kids, but then at the same time they're like, this is not the real thing.
Oh my gosh.
I have always said, like, I want my kids to want to go out and be with me. So I'm going to make it as enjoyable as possible, because parts of hiking truly are difficult. Like oftentimes we're sweaty or it's, you know, it's hard to get up that hill. We're tired. So we're doing a difficult thing, and I'm doing it for so many reasons, a big part of which is building connection, creating space for connection. But I want them to want to keep doing it. So if that means that, you know, they know for that last half mile when we're all dragging, they're going to get M&Ms or a lollipop, or, you know, we're going to go out and get boba afterwards. Like they're
speak
stoked about it.
Also,
you know, like I love treats. So
it's a win-win.
Oh my kids, I think they figured this out, and it doesn't matter when they're with me. They're just like, hey, you want to stop by for some ice cream real quick? And like, it takes so little to convince me to do it. I mean, just so little. Like, did you have a hard day? Oh, let's go eat food.
It's true though. But I remember my mom saying there was, when my oldest brother was in high school, there was this one family that he would talk about all the time. Now, granted, they had two really beautiful daughters, but the mom had like a special cupboard in the pantry where she stocked all of her daughter's friends, all of their like favorite foods, like maybe the foods they didn't get to have all the time at home or whatever, because she wanted her house to be the house where everybody gathered because she wanted to keep an eye on her two beautiful daughters.
Totally.
So I think food really does like bring about that connection, and it brings people together. We all know that.
Yeah.
So
that's one of my favorite things about, sorry.
Keep going.
Actually, about having teenage sons is like, I and their friends, I am in awe of one, how much they can eat, and yep. two, how much they enjoy it. Like, I just love how happy they are when, yes. you know, you like bring home a bunch of pizzas and they're just like, yes, pizza. Oh man, I'm so stoked. And they're just, they're so they're happy. Like,
their heads yes. are exploding with joy. No.
You brought them pizza. And I just love that you can just show them love in a really simple way, but it means a lot to them because they just, they need to eat. Their bodies are like, we need fuel. And it just makes them so happy. Oh, I love doing that.
I love it. Well, it's that's so true. We share that. So we're talking about connection with your kids and the practical parts of that. And, you know, one of the things going back to kind of like the protecting your kids from pornography, one of the things that I'm sure you hear often, and obviously we didn't talk about this at all, so I'm just going to throw you a curveball, but talking about the details maybe behind, or maybe some of the statistics behind what's going on now with boys and girls in pornography. And we know yeah. that girls yeah. engage a lot more than what people assume. Yes. But at the same time, we also know like they're in one sense, they're similar, maybe not the same. But maybe I'm even understanding that wrong. So could you speak to that for a little bit, like some of those statistics, or, you know, girls versus boys, how to have that conversation? Are the motives the same, or the desires, you know, is it a connection for a boy just like it is for a girl, and all that kind of stuff? So yeah, speak to us on that for a minute.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because for years and years now, I think the assumption has been pornography is a man's issue.
Yep.
And if it's talked about at all, the husband or the dad would talk to the sons if they did. And that was kind of it, leaving out the females out of the conversation, which now I think it's wrong for so many reasons. One, mm-hmm. because we know a lot of dads aren't talking to their sons because they themselves are struggling with pornography. So they feel like, how could I talk to my son and say, don't do this when I'm struggling myself? So there's dads who are not talking to their kids because they don't feel like they can. Mm-hmm. And I have so much compassion for them because I want them to know that they still can and should talk to their kids, because their struggle could be the fire to light that God can use to say, hey, I don't want this for you.
Yeah.
So that's part of it, is that dads aren't talking to their kids as much because so many dads are struggling. But then also girls are engaging with pornography more and more. And more girls than ever have before, but the way that they engage is often different than with boys, especially when at the start. For example, just recently I was on Facebook. Keep in mind, I have lots of parental controls and all the things on my phone, but this, it was an ad for for a romantic story. It was like a short story, and they gave you a teaser, and it was like falling in love with my boyfriend's dad or something like that. And it had some, you know, kind of racy pictures, but it was really the text that would draw you in. Now, most guys are not, they operate differently. The picture, the visual is going to be what gets them first, but girls, we're relational, and mm-hmm. we are interested in stories. And so the pornography industry often finds that girls are drawn to a different type of pornography, one that actually does offer this romantic relational story, a situation to draw the girl in, and then to begin engaging with pornography, which then quickly that whole role of images and the pictures or the movies take over, but the initial pull is that whole idea of relationship, relational romance. And that's for girls, teenage girls, college age girls, but even for grown women, especially imagine a young mom who's tired, she's got little kids, her husband's busy at work, they're tired every night. She feels like, we have no romance in our marriage. We have no, there's no spark. he's not bringing me flowers. And I'm going to read this sexy, racy story that's all about having an affair and all about this romance and how quickly she could get pulled into that. Yeah. The pornography industry, they're all about making money. It's one of the biggest money-making industries in the entire world. And they know their audience. So they know that they can create a different type of pornography to appeal to women, to pull them in, starting when they're young, and keep them coming back for more.
Oh, wow. That's not only insightful, but so helpful to understand. Yeah. And even how to talk to our girls about that. You know, I have three girls, a son and three girls. And, you know, that it's like trying to educate myself of like, how do we actually engage in the conversation with our girls? Because obviously they're different because boys and girls are different. And and the maybe the origin or the desire maybe starts different, or maybe some of the needs different, but that's so helpful. You know, before we close out, I just want to ask, is there any, what are some resources that you have found really helpful? And I'm thinking about for the parents, right? But also like for the husband or the wife that are listening to this right now and going, you know what? I have young kids, but I'm the one struggling, or I need the help. Yeah, what are some of the resources, the non-shame filled resources that we can give to just help and give some like direction of help?
Okay. This is one of my favorite things, and I have a ton. So I am going to send you guys a bunch of links to books and articles and podcasts, but off the top of my head, I'm just going to give you a few of my hands down favorites. Okay. So for a wife, who might be struggling with a husband, who's struggling with pornography, because that's a really common scenario. Yeah. And that's a situation where often the parents aren't talking to the kids because it's an issue in their own marriage, in their own life. There's a group called Fight for Love Ministries. And the woman who started it, she and her husband are in this battle fighting. And she wrote from the perspective of a wife whose husband had a porn addiction. She found out like shortly into their marriage. So she has a book called Fight for Love, and the book and her podcast are phenomenal. And that would be for a woman who is dealing with that issue in her marriage. That's who she's specifically speaking to. If you're parents who are dealing with this, whether you might be the wife who's dealing with it or the dad, and you don't know, you know, how to move forward, I can't recommend enough the work of Josh McDowell. If you visit his website, he's got tremendous list of resources for help with sexual addiction, help with sexual abuse, past trauma. He's got articles and blog posts, just a wealth of help. So Josh McDowell, just visit his website. He's got so much help for you. And if your kids are struggling, he's got help in that area as well. If you, last one I'm going to suggest, and then I'll, like I said, I'll send you guys a bunch of stuff. If you have older kids and you're wondering like, how do I cover all these topics? I don't feel equipped. Like as your kids get older, you need to talk about things like, what do you do if somebody asks you for a nude picture? And you're like, I can't talk to my kids about that. Or are you going to talk to your kids? You need to, about masturbation. And is it healthy for them? Is it good for them? Like for their lifetime, for their marriage, you need to have a conversation about that. And you think, oh, how do I have that conversation?
Yeah, yeah.
There's a book called, I got to remember. It's brand new. So that's why I don't have it memorized. Chasing Love. It's by, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, well, if you don't remember, we'll grab it and we'll put it in the show notes so people can remember, but it's Chasing Love.
Yeah. And it's by actually Sean McDowell, who is McDowell, the guy I just recommended, his son. And, and he covers all of these topics. And this book is phenomenal because you can actually read it with your teen. So it's written in short chapters, and you could sit down and either read it to your teen and make them feel uncomfortable, but that's fine.
Totally fine.
They can deal. Or you can say, you read a chapter and then we're going to, you know, go get donuts and talk about it, or hang out, walk and talk. But it's a great way for you to have difficult conversations, but with help of somebody who has maybe more expertise than you. So those are three recommendations.
And oh, I have It's so funny you were talking about Fight for Love Ministries. So Rosie, who leads that, started it. So I met Rosie. So we were doing a conference, our parenting conference in Canada. And she was at this big event that we were at, and it was just starting. Fight for Love was just starting. Mm. And she came by, we had like this table, and it's the spot where we all meet, like anyone that's contributing to the event, met each other. And she had just started Fight for Love Ministries. And so she had gave me like her card. She's like, I'm starting this ministry. And it's basically all, you know, from this perspective. And so all I can say, Rosie was the sweetest, kindest person. I'm so glad
she
to hear.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, I heard a little bit of her story. I haven't, obviously she has a podcast, which we can link in here too, but yeah, just a phenomenal person who is really taking her story and using it to help people in such a particular way. But I thought that was so great. Right when you said that, I was like, I remember meeting Rosie. That's wonderful. So that's incredibly helpful. Greta, thank you so much for your help and your time and your resources. This has just been so rich. I know, mm-hmm. I know we're learning a lot, and we're in the, you know, you're ahead of us as in your kids' stages and ages and in this conversation, and we're learners with you. Is there anything that we haven't asked you that you've just been like, man, I got to say this thing, or just want people to kind of know this, anything at all, shoot from the hip, anything you want?
I want to say that wherever you are at with your kids or yourself or your marriage in the fight against porn, I want to tell you that, gosh, I'm going to get emotional. I just want to tell you that there's always hope, and that pornography is a dark place, but God's love is brighter. Yeah. And it is never too late. You are not without hope. And I love, there's a verse in the book of Genesis where Sarah, who can't have a baby, and she's, you know, she's wondering what God can do, but she has this moment where she realizes, and she says, "Is anything too hard for the Lord?" And I think that we need to cling to that if we're in a place, whether we're just scared to talk to our kids and we think, I can't do it, say, well, you're not doing it alone. You're doing it with God. Is anything too hard for the Lord? No, He will equip you. If you are in a place where your kid has been exposed to porn and you think, I don't know how to help them, I don't know if they're going to get better, remember, there's nothing too hard for God. He can do it. Or if you're in a place where you yourself or your family member, your spouse is struggling with porn, or you are yourself and you think you can't escape, just remember, is anything too hard for the Lord? No, He is there with you. You are not without hope. And I love engaging with people and helping. So if you have questions or you want to engage with me, you can reach out to me on social media. I'm most active on Instagram, and that's where, if you want to send me a message and just say, hey, I need to know more, I have lots of resources there. And I'd love to talk to you and help you out if I can.
Thank you so much, Greta. I think that is just such a perfect way to end. Thank you for that scripture and that reminder, because I think that there are so many that need to hear that. So thank you so much for spending so much time with us. And I want to do this again. I feel like I have still so many things I want to talk to you about.
Yeah,
you knocked
it out of the park. Like, this was incredible. We are so thankful for you and thankful to share this with all of our friends and the family here. So enjoy your day. Enjoy your hikes. I can't wait to get some more M&Ms. I'm going to load up and stock up on the way home. You've given me complete inspiration and permission. Thank you, by the way. To get tons of M&Ms, and we're going to do
that. The real kind, not the dye-free kind.
None of that, none of that fake stuff. So Greta, thank you so much. We will talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you. I love being with you guys.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If this podcast has blessed you in any way, here's a few ways that you can partner with us in this ministry. First is to give. Intentional Parents is a nonprofit, and we rely on the generous giving of our partners. So please head over to our website, intentionalparents.org/give, if you would like to become one of our partners through giving. Second is to share it. If this has at all been helpful to you, we encourage you to share it with your friends, your family, and those that you know would be blessed by it. Third is to follow us on social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on Instagram @intentional_parents. And lastly, if you would head over to iTunes if you enjoyed today's episode and leave a review on iTunes, this helps us bring more hope, help, and healing for families.